the story back up.
All right, good
I was
try.
Running the fourth track. We don't have four mics. Alex is trying, desperately trying.
I don't mind talking with my mouth full into a microphone, but I don't want to crunch into it.
Yeah, it's a little much. So, yeah, as I cough into it. Earlier today, I was editing or making an attempt to edit the Archon recording, and at some point, I don't know what happened. Like, I lost track of who had which microphone.
There was a lot of mic swapping going on.
There was. I think at one point, though, like, Ben, like, held his microphone to the side as Lena leaned over.
Yeah.
And was trying to whisper to you, Kayla. And so, it sounded just like this. I didn't mean to grab your ass. It's like, like, that's all I heard. Like, other people are having a legit conversation, and all I hear is that. That's not in the final recording. I did drop that out. I almost isolated it and pulled it out as a separate recording. I didn't do it that time. But there were a number of things like that. So, yeah, I apologize to anybody who listened through that dumpster fire.
Recording is... I knew, even as we were recording it, I was like, oh.
Going into it, I knew it was going to be a problem, yeah.
I was like, I don't...
I wasn't.
I already know the show notes I'm writing for.
Yeah, there was. We already had the flip flop fuck night discussion, and that actually got mentioned in the recording. So that's why it's not in
the recording, right?
That conversation's not in the recording.
Okay.
Mention of the discussion is in there, but it's just a high level mention.
Okay.
No.
Because that discussion got obnoxious.
Yeah. Yes, it did. Yeah, because that's when I kicked people out of the room because we were going to start recording. It's like, you other people need to leave unless you want to be part of this recording. No, you don't. Get out. And I don't know what we're talking about next week.
Oh, well, we've had a million people request that new sci-fi movie. Whose name?
Blade Runner.
I do want to see Blade Runner. It is a 3-hour long movie.
Ooh.
And it is a sequel.
I'm not going to watch the first one. The work stands alone is the rule, right?
That would be ideal. I don't know. I haven't seen the movie, so I can't say if it will or not. I think it will. That might actually be...
The last one came out a long time ago, right?
It was like 30 years ago.
Yeah. I feel like it. You can't expect somebody to watch a 30-year-old movie. I guess I have high expectations in this area because, like, Fury Road was great. You did not need to watch the first two movies to get what was going on.
The first three movies.
First three movies, sorry.
Yeah.
Like...
each of those movies does stand on its own.
That's perfect. So
each of those four movies do stand completely on their own. Less Mad Max Thunderdome than the other three, but even that's still a standalone story. All right, Blade Runner.
All right, let's do that. We'll try to see it. We have anything going on this weekend yet?
Spears in the Garden?
I mean, maybe
not this weekend.
That's next weekend, right?
It's next Friday. Yep.
Maybe David wants to go see it. No?
We'll figure it out.
So this morning, I got to
work.
Hold on. I had to get to work on time this morning because I had a meeting like right when I'm supposed to get there. I ended up being like 3 minutes late because of some slightly unexpected traffic and then several red lights, but it was all right. Went through this meeting, and then seemed to go well. I presented some things. There's a new client that wants to buy, like, a lot of stuff from us, so it's great.
Yeah, that's business. So, business would be good.
Right. I was basically presenting it to our internal team so they knew, like, the stuff that I had built and what it's, like, and some other stuff and what it's capable of. Get out of the meeting, and apparently there's some clusterfuck of a situation going on with one of our servers. Nobody knows what's going on with it, but like one application is just going crazy on there. And we had a promotion last night for the code, all this other stuff. And then I start walking away and somebody goes, oh, hey, by the way, your shirt's on backwards. It's fixed now.
Well,
so I went through that whole meeting for an hour with a backwards shirt.
Good job.
Yeah, it was a collared shirt, too.
Wow.
What?
Yeah.
Oh.
Like, it was on Inside Out? Mm-hmm. Or, okay, Inside Out.
Sorry, Inside Out. That's
different from backwards. Because if you put a fucking collared shirt on backwards, Alex, you deserve everything you get for it.
Sorry, Inside Out.
Oh, my God.
So.
Maybe they just thought he was making a statement?
I don't know.
I don't know how to wear shirts. That's my statement.
Yeah, I don't care about shirts.
Shirts aren't important. Look at this thing I made. Look at it. Look at it.
What a good distraction technique, though. Keep people from looking at your presentation.
It's kind of like a...
I can't stop looking at his backward shirt.
So. Also, and then, like, basically the whole day I spent with a group of, like, 7 other people trying to figure out what the fuck is going on with this application on the server. And none of us figured out what's going on.
Is it making paperclips?
I wish. It would be so much more useful. Like, we could sell those.
Have you played this paperclip game?
No.
So there's this stupid little game that I've gotten roped into. It's on a website called decisionproblem.com. And you start off and you have, like, so many inches of wire. And you click and you make a paperclip out of the wire. And you just keep clicking. And you can set the price of your paperclips. And it shows you what the current demand for your paperclips are. And as you start selling paperclips, you start making money. Once you have enough money, you can buy auto clippers. They just automatically clip the paperclips for you. All right. So each time you buy an auto clipper, they get a little more expensive. Then you have to buy more wire and just keep going and keep going. And pretty soon, like, you can start building computational machines with your paperclips. And then by a resource engine that does financial investment for you. So you can invest some of the money into the stock market and it will auto bid on stock for you. And like, it's the craziest bullshit. But like, you get to a point where you have used up all the resources on planet Earth in making paperclips, so then you can start building probes and sending them out into the universe to make more paperclips. And some of your paperclips will, or some of your probes have value drift to them, so that they like escape and become autonomous and fight back against you. And so you have to put resources into combating them. Like, it's this crazy bullshit game.
Is this just a giant metaphor for, like, big business and employees and unions and rebelling or something?
Oh, my God. Like, it runs. Like, it's just constantly running. And, yeah, I think I played it for, like, 8 hours.
Whoa.
And like, used up all the resources in the universe.
This is a web game?
Yep. It's just a browser-based game. It's just text. Ugh. Until you get to combat. And then there's this little video screen that pops up. You don't control anything. It just does it there right on the screen. And then at some point, it starts playing music. Like, the browser just starts playing music. Because you've hit a certain level of creativity. Because you're... The computational processors... You have processors and memory. And once you max out the memory, the memory storage, then it starts building creativity points so that you can do more stuff. You spend creativity to do more. It's crazy.
All right. This sounds like a weird game.
It is. It's very weird.
Like
it's a serious time waster, but I wasted some serious time on it over the weekend.
Look, the last game that I felt this way about, I ended up buying for Kayla as a joke gift. And then she put like 200 hours into it.
No, I did not put 200 hours into it.
I
put 20 hours into it, okay. Which is a considerable amount less than 200.
Yeah,
it's a considerable lot less. Amount of hours, but if you would have just said 20, like that would have been a sufficient amount of time, but you said 200 and that's too much.
20. It was had a full boyfriend.
We've talked about this a
couple times before. That was just a free game on PS4.
What
as
was?
Far the PS, part of the PS Plus.
Had a full boyfriend?
Yeah, I just got it. I haven't played it.
You should play it.
I was like, haha, this game is so funny.
By having played it, I probably did spend about 15 minutes on it. I'm like, this is the weirdest fucking thing.
This is dumb. And then I woke up 6 hours later. like deep into this like dramatic storyline that I did not anticipate, like with these characters, like I had feelings. It was just stupid. Like,
yeah, I could see that it was heading down that path, and I broke out of the loop early enough. I think not me.
I had no clue.
Yeah, Kayla's like, oh, this is so funny. And then, oh my god, this bird is so deep. This bird is so emo and deep.
No, it's not the bird that's emo and deep. It was the story is really fucking involved.
Yeah. Yeah, I got that. And, I just liked how there were birds, but then they had all these human avatars for all the birds. I'm like, I don't understand what
they
is
only, like,
happening?
See once or something like that.
Yeah.
You never see again.
This is this kind of bird. And then they show a person. I'm like, what? What? I don't understand what is happening.
There's another game like that. Stanley Parable.
That's just a time waster. That isn't... No, don't.
Okay.
He's not here. We should bring him into the show.
Because you have no clue what audio is on that.
No, I don't.
Okay. Yeah, so don't.
Okay.
Maybe that's not while we're recording.
That's fair.
I'm sorry. I was talking.
Sorry.
I have a specific request from my Snapchat fam. They're like, you don't talk enough in the podcast. Because I pimp this shit.
Oh, shit. People are listening?
Yeah.
What?
Sometimes.
Sweet.
I had somebody that was like, yeah. Like, it was last week. I'm like, yeah, I'm recording the podcast. They're like, oh, you have a podcast? I'm like, yeah, this is where it's at. And they're like, okay, I'm going to listen. I'm like, yeah, sure. Usually I just never hear from them again. Probably because they listen to an episode and they hear what, like, a crazy feminazi like that I am. They're like, yeah, no, fuck this. This dude, like, he messaged me. He's like, yeah, I just listened to Atomic Blonde. And I was like, oh, that's cool. Wait a minute. So then I get this thing where I have to, like, go and listen to it to see what I said. Because, like, what?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, what has been divulged?
Yeah.
So that episode starts with the boobs are the boobs for your hands.
I forgot about that conversation.
And then that is also the episode where it was the first episode we were back from Sam and Haley's wedding.
Oh my.
So
yeah.
It was the one where we discussed,
boy howdy,
everything that happened there. So, you know, it's just a good introduction to me as a person, really.
I do declare.
You're still talking to me, so.
Well, there's that.
I was just like, oh my god.
This is like a good litmus test. Like, listen to two of these episodes and see if you still want to talk to me.
Yeah. Our friend Phil would accost me because he would listen to the podcast and he wouldn't say anything about listening to the podcast until he saw me. He's like, I got a problem with what you said about that movie. Hey, Phil, it's been 6 months since I've seen you. We've recorded a number of episodes in that time.
Probably six.
Which
maybe more.
Which movie specifically are we talking about? You know the one. God damn it, Phil. No, I don't. Oh, well, I had a problem with it. All right, Phil, what was it? All right, I'm just going to play along. You know when you said that thing, it was wrong. Yeah, I know. I was just doing it for the show. Just doing it for the conversation, Phil. Oh, I knew it. I knew it. I knew that had to be it. All right, good. Good talk.
Sam did that to me in the Hangout once. He was like, oh, I love what you said here. And I'm like, what did I say? So I don't remember what I said.
They'll be like, oh, yeah, Kayla, you're saying, like, preach, Kayla. And I'm like,
what did I say? I don't know,
what are we talking about?
Yeah.
Oh, you're right about that. Oh, okay, well, you have to be more specific, because, like.
I'm right a lot.
Yeah. I say a lot of the right things.
All right, so speaking about being a feminazi.
Yeah, what's
minute,
up?
This Harvey Weinstein thing.
Oh my God.
Man, I feel like it's something that should be talked about because everybody's talking about it, rightfully so.
Yeah.
Because this shit's happening still. This shit should have stopped happening a long time ago. But it hasn't, and still happens. Did you see Terry Crews' thing?
Yeah.
Of all people. Fucking Terry Crews.
Wasn't Harvey Weinstein, though. No. He's just saying that, like, a high-level, like, person in Hollywood sexually assaulted him.
Walked up and just grabbed his junk. Like, in front of his wife. He and his wife were standing there. This guy just walked up and grabbed him. It's like,
And the other person is still alive?
Well, yeah, because he's like, that's what well, Terry Crews' point. Dynamic. He was like, yeah. Like,
oh, my God.
Like, I didn't know what to do. Like, because all I could see is, like, the media story of Terry Crews, you know, murders this guy. Big black man murders this guy.
Yeah.
High-level Hollywood executive.
I didn't know that happened. I'm a big fan of Terry Crews. I didn't know that happened.
Yeah, he came
Everyone's
out.
Everyone's a big fan of Terry Crews. Let's yeah, how can you not put that out there? Yeah,
that's like a given.
I'm so much a fan of him. I'm a fan of the person that built his computer.
What? That's I don't even like where this
that's
is going.
Jay's 2 cents. Built Terry Crews' computer. Sorry.
No.
No, all right.
No. Terry Crews is the man.
Yeah. Yeah. And he came out. He's like, yeah. He's like, I'm not trying to steal anyone's thunder here or anything. But
also me too.
But here are the thoughts that I went through. And I'm a big dude. I'm a big black man.
Yeah.
And he's like,
I'm fucking Terry Crews.
Yeah. I'm a known quantity. And like, right. This guy did this without fear of getting his ass put in the ground. It's crazy.
I haven't read a lot into exactly what's going on with Harvey Weinstein specifically. I don't know who he is. I know what's going on around him, like all the reported sexual harassment and sexual assault from him. I've been more in tune with the campaign that started from it. Not started. It didn't start with this, but that was kind of tapped into, which is the Me Too campaign.
Right.
And also, I read this really interesting article, and I remember this happening, but I was so young, like, it wouldn't have even been on my radar. But somebody pulled up an old clip of Courtney Love on a red carpet somewhere where she calls it specifically Harvey Weinstein out.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, what, like, is there any advice you'd give to a young girl coming to Hollywood? Yeah, don't take invitations from Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah.
So to give just a little bit of context for who he is, he and his brother, Bob, started Miramax and started the Weinstein Company after that. Miramax is known for starting the careers of Quentin Tarantino, Kevin Smith. They made Pulp Fiction. I think that was either their first or one of their first movies was Pulp Fiction.
Mm-hmm.
They bought Clerks and sent Kevin Smith off on his career. Just a ton of those early indie, those mid-early 90 movies that just created a ton of careers. And movies that just weren't being, big Hollywood just wasn't backing. They weren't producing those movies.
Yeah.
I was reading an article by a screenwriter who was picked up by Weinstein. He's like, yeah. He's like, we all knew this guy was a fucking lecherous pig. Like, we didn't know the level that it went to the level of assault. We knew this guy was a pig. But we didn't know, like, just how far it went.
Right.
But at the same time, he was making all of our careers.
Right.
For us, he was extremely generous. He was giving us things that we would never have dreamed of having.
Here's what bugs me about that part is, with his executive team, he had a routine. So his executive team knew. He would go up to his hotel room, where his executive team already is, with whoever he wanted to sexually assault, and corner who he wanted his victim, and have his executive team leave the hotel room.
Right.
So, like,
well,
they would go in thinking, oh, this is a safe place. There's a bunch of people in this mm-hmm. suite, mm-hmm. and then everybody else leaves.
Yep.
Yep.
So, like,
yeah, and like the one guy, like the guy in the article was saying, he's like, you know, I can't say for sure that some of this wasn't consensual, like that. Somebody was made the offer and they like, sure, I'm gonna do that. I'll do anything for my shot. He's like, I'm not saying that. But if at any point this was consensual, then that just fueled this guy. You know, it was just fuel to his fire that he was doing something that, but yeah, it's just fucking awful. But
what you're talking about, Alex, is the bro mentality. Like,
it wasn't just men. It was also women. But yeah,
it doesn't change anything of what I just said.
Right.
It's just,
yeah,
they might not have even seen it as sexual assault. They might have seen it as, oh, you know, time for us to leave. Harvey's got, you know.
That's what his brother said. His fucking brother was like, well, I knew he was sleeping with a lot of women, but I thought it was consensual. It's like, dude, you fucking knew. But
I'm talking about specifically, I'm trying to specifically talk about the situation you were talking about?
I think his brother was involved in that situation.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know about any of that. I
people convince that, themselves.
But... Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
They convince themselves. Oh, we're not leaving this vulnerable, you know, young woman alone with a predator. We're just being a bro to Harvey and giving him the opportunity to get laid. It's all about, like, how you use your cognitive dissonance. Like,
yeah, and there's also the cognitive dissonance of this guy has too much to lose. He has so much to lose if he were to ever do anything wrong. He couldn't do anything wrong. Yeah.
And that isn't to say that none of them knew. I'm just saying, like, you're like, oh, how could all these people, like...
It just bothers me, I guess, that there were this many people involved and it takes this long. I mean, the comedian whose name is... Ugh.
Whose name is what?
What are you referencing?
The comedian who has a bunch of rape charges against him now.
Louis C.K.?
No. What?
Yeah, there's some stuff going on with Louis C.K. I heard about.
No, the fucking dude, he had that show where he was like the family guy, like family doctor.
Oh, Cosby.
Fuck, yeah, Cosby. Bill Jesus. Cosby. Oh, my God.
Oh.
Oh, that guy, Bill Cosby.
I thought we were still talking about Harvey.
Well, I was drawing a parallel to Bill Cosby. Bill Cosby did the same thing. He would have a party with some people over and then everybody else would leave.
That wasn't his MO.
Didn't he like have somebody over with his wife and one of his friends, and then his wife and his friend would go away and he would drug his victim?
It was usually just his wife, but it wasn't like a big party. Oh. Like, I guess it's kind of the same thing, but yeah, no, yeah, that is a way to that people get their victims, like, you make them comfortable. Oh, there are other people here. Oh, suddenly I'm alone.
Yeah.
Like, I thought you were saying some comedian that Harvey Weinstein, like, had sexually assaulted.
No, I was just making the parallel between
that probably
Cosby and Harvey.
That probably happened, though, because he's apparently sexually assaulted everybody.
So is there now more than 40 accusers?
Kevin Smith is donating any residuals he has from any Miramax or Weinstein Company movies to an organization called Women in Film that promotes female filmmakers making it on their own, like supports them just being filmmakers without having to rely on skeezy assholes like Harvey.
Who was it that finally like broke this open?
There was a number of them. There was like this cluster of them. I don't know who...
I don't know
it first, but there was a group of them, and it's been talked about for a long time. Apparently, Rose McGowan's been...
Rose McGowan, that was the name I was trying to think of.
Yeah, she's been going on about this apparently for some time. That I don't follow Rose McGowan, so I wasn't aware.
It started with Ashley Judd, is what this says.
Is it the CNN article?
Yep,
that's yeah, I just hit that one too. Yeah, this was, you know, even if he wants to believe it's consensual, he was doing this from a position of authority, which, like,
yeah,
that's
the implied threat there alone.
Yeah, that takes away a lot of consent.
Yeah,
like, you pretty much have to get written permission from that person's mom at that point. It's okay, you know, because it's just the threat of authority is so huge. And when you're talking about people's careers,
like, did you hear the fucking recording that came out with him and the hotel employee?
Mm-mm. I heard there was a recording, but I didn't listen to it.
Oh, it's fucking terrible. He's like, get in the shower with me. She's like, no, I don't want to. He's like, you can't leave. Otherwise, I'll tell your boss and you'll be fired and I'll never stay at this hotel again. Like, he's just threatening her endlessly. And then he starts masturbating in front of her. And this is recorded and it was turned to the police and they just swept it under the rug. Like,
yeah,
they didn't give a shit because he's apparently rich and can do whatever the fuck he wants.
He doesn't even have to be rich.
No, he doesn't.
Yep. So, dudes, don't fucking rape. Don't fucking do it. Treat everyone like a human, even Kayla.
Kayla's a god.
Yeah, she cranked out those goddamn cookies. You're goddamn right.
This has been real rough, social media, the past couple of days. What's weird is, like, I've got the people on my friends list who are women. And then I have the people on my friends who are men. So we have all these, like, Me Too statuses popping up. And, like, I have all these dudes coming to me and, like, they're like, oh, my God. Like, I didn't know. And I'm like, like, you really didn't? I'm like looking at my friends list and I'm like, there are a lot of really brave women coming forward, you know, posting about it. And I'm like, for any number of those, I know way more women who aren't saying anything. Like,
yeah.
So they're like, oh, I didn't realize like how many women. I was like, it's more than this. Like, right. It's more than you're seeing. So it's right. Just,
well,
the disconnect there. Like,
yeah. And like, in talking with Julie about this, because she's like, I know it happens. She's like, but I guess I've never felt like I was harassed. I never felt like I was abused or harassed because I'm a woman.
So there's also a disconnect there where people, they don't think that they were harassed. They're like, oh, this is just how it is. Anna Kasparian just told a story today about how she was like, I was harassed once in a park by a guy who hit my ass. And then she stopped and she was like, no, I've been harassed more than that. I was sexually assaulted once while taking a photograph with somebody that I looked up to. And at the time, she was like, this is just what it is to be a woman. She didn't see it as sexual assault. But that's like, ugh.
A lot of really tough conversations going on.
Yep. Well, that's why I wanted to have it. I wanted to bring it up because it's a tough conversation. And it's shining a light on people that are public figures or somewhat public figures that a lot of people look up to and respected for the work that we saw that they did, but didn't know about or didn't believe or turned a blind eye to some of the things that they might have heard about the person.
Right.
And part of the Me Too conversation that I was confused about, like I saw it, the people were saying that it was regarding sexual abuse. And then some people were saying it was sexual assault. And some people were saying it's either. And so I saw a number of men who said Me Too. And I believe specifically those men were referring to assault.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw someone else who was like, all you men, this was a guy saying, all you men who are saying Me Too, you can be an ally without saying things like that and taking it away from other people. And it was like, it's confusing. That's a confusing message. Like, and I think that's the confusion of these hashtag memes. And to call it a meme isn't really fair. It's a movement. But without a clarity of statement behind it, there's confusion.
There is a clarity of statement. Me Too is a campaign that was started years and years ago. And I think, was it Alyssa Milano? I should probably look that up before I say anybody's name. A like high-level celebrity used it recently when talking about, I don't know if she was talking, I honestly haven't looked into this much except for like talking to everybody about the Me Too hashtag. She was either talking about Harvey Weinstein or just talking about her own personal story with sexual assault or sexual harassment. And there's a copy and paste that goes along with posting Me Too that explains exactly what's going on. But I don't think, like, I've never looked at any, I've seen a couple guys post Me Too, and I've never looked at them and thought they were just posting it to be allies. I assumed that they were saying, I have also been a victim.
That's what I assumed too.
Yeah. And I had a conversation with at least one of them where he was like, you know, I don't want to overstep my boundaries or try to take over a movement that's not meant for me. But in my mind, this is something that overwhelmingly affects women, but it's important that men who experience it as well speak up, because there is such a huge stigma against male victims.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is a tough way to form this.
It's different stigmas.
There are different stigmas. Yeah. They're very different stigmas.
It's, yeah.
Thank you for
taking
that bullet for me. Cause
no, it's people. Yeah. If you're a man or a woman, they look at you differently, or they like they're everything about it. Like the whole line of questioning, I imagine the police reports, the media coverage, all of it's different. I've never heard of a case of a man being sexually assaulted and the media victim blaming, for example.
Have you ever heard of a case of a man being sexually assaulted? Like,
yeah.
When?
I mean, usually it's like a teacher-student thing that I've heard of. No?
So, like a female teacher with a male student?
Male teacher, male student. Female teacher, male student is horrible coverage. Like, because nobody takes it seriously. Nobody considers it assault. It's really fucked up.
Okay. But I guess I'm just confused the last time. Like, when we're talking about children, like, the stigma isn't really there.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
The stigma isn't there from society. The stigma is internal.
Yeah.
For the person who would have to say something, it all comes from inside at that point. It's all about the shame of it happening. It shouldn't happen to me. I'm a boy.
Right.
You know, it's...
And then the stigma might be there later in life. So, like, if you're an adult and you're an adult man and you're talking about a sexual assault that you experienced, then even when you were a child, then, yeah, people are going to, you know, brush that off and be like, oh, you know, you're a boy. Like, but if we're specifically talking about a situation where they're reporting a case of a man, like, sexually assaulting a young child, a boy, like, people don't look down on the boy for that.
That's so true.
Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, yeah. When it comes to children, like, people tend to be, like, slightly more rational. Like, but if you're, like, a teenage boy...
I don't know. I've just never heard of a news story where a male sexual assault victim was victim blamed. Whereas a woman, it's just constant victim blaming. Why was she at that party? Why was this happening? Why was that happening?
Yeah, oh, but, Monica but, Lewinsky, but again, we're talking about, blah, blah, but we're blah. Talking about, again, we're talking about different things.
Yeah, no.
Because if we're, like, whenever you're talking about male victims, it's children. But you never even hear about male victims that are otherwise.
There are male victims that aren't children.
No, I'm saying that there are. There are male victims that aren't children, absolutely. Yeah, I'm just saying that when we talk about that,
I guess
as a culture, as a society, we just don't talk about it. Like,
yeah, I guess it's not really in the media.
Because if a guy came up to you, not you, if a guy came up to us as, like, one person as a society and was like, oh man, like, I got really drunk last night and, like, I think I was sexually assaulted. Even, no matter what he's feeling, what turmoil he's feeling, what pain he's feeling, which is going to be similar to anybody who's sexually assaulted, like, that's going to be turned around as, oh, like, yeah, good on you, man. Like, you're a dude. Like, that's what you're supposed to want. Like, it's a completely different...
Unless it was another guy doing it to you.
That's fair, yeah.
And then it would be a completely different thing.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, I guess it depends on your sexual orientation, right?
Right.
But the stigma is such that, like, men can't even... Like, they can't even come forward.
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of men in the military who haven't come forward. Like, they do these studies where they find out that men get assaulted all the time, and they just, they don't talk about it because it's not...
A lot of times it's from
I mean, that's the
people
same
with, of authority, too.
That's the same with either gender, but like we said, the stigma is different. Like, we don't believe either gender for different reasons. Like, for men,
you're
it's
right.
just like, you're supposed to just like it. And for women, it's just, you're a lying bitch. So, like, why would we believe
Why are you ruining that man?
Right, yeah.
This makes me want to vomit.
Yeah, it's gross. It's gross in so many ways.
Very gross.
But hopefully there will be a few less of these assholes.
There's a lot of really honest conversations going on. A lot of good introspection I'm seeing from people around on social media, locally. Like, it's sucks, but it's weird because, like, I feel like some of us already knew this stuff was happening and... It's kind of weird how this stuff just, like, breaks open.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of us are like, oh my god, I didn't know. We're like, oh.
No, I mean, I've been on both sides of that. Mostly on the side that doesn't know, so.
Yeah, because we're dudes. We don't see it. We don't live it.
Well, not just that.
And if you don't have experience with something, it's harder to just accept it.
That's the part. So, like, I can give you an example of white privilege that I learned, and I may have talked about this already. This was months ago, but I was out to lunch with one of my, well, with three of my coworkers, and somebody, I have no idea how we got on this topic of conversation, but I was like, yeah, if I'm at a grocery store and I'm just buying one or two things, I don't get a bag. And one of my coworkers was like, yeah, that's a white thing. And she's black. And I'm like, not wanting to take a bag that I don't need is a white thing. And she's like, yeah, if you leave the grocery store without your items in a bag and you're black, you get tackled on the way out. She's like, I have to teach my son, even if he's just buying a pack of gum, it goes in a bag with the receipt until he gets outside.
That's horrible.
And I was like, That was not a way that I even imagined I was privileged.
Yeah, right. It's strange, like, little things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when I'm walking down the sidewalk, like if I'm just going out on lunch to clear my head or something like that, if there's a woman on the sidewalk, like walking towards me or in front of me, I will intentionally cross the street now to try to make her, like, because I'm afraid of her being uncomfortable with me being close or approaching her. Because I now recognize that I'm seen as a threat in a lot of situations, especially in the middle of fucking downtown St. Louis. So, like,
I have this makeup on me for some fucking reason. It looks like I, like a cat got to my arm or something. It's just lipstick.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Covering up the bruising.
So, like, yeah, somebody posted an article where it was it's an old thing that I've read 500 million times. I don't even know if it's a true story, but where this professor was teaching a class and they, like, wrote on the chalkboard, they're like, okay, the men are on this side, the women are on this side. Men, list all the ways throughout the day that you, the things that you do consciously to not be sexually assaulted.
Was anything written down?
I don't know. Is there anything to write down?
Nothing for me on a daily basis. If I was in prison, I might say don't bend over, but that would be it.
You know what's funny? That is, like, almost verbatim. There was, sure. Like, it was like there's, like, nervous laughter, and then somebody will make a crack about prison, and then...
Yeah.
like sure. That's...
And then she asked the women the same thing, and, like, you can fill the board.
Yeah.
Like, of stuff you think about daily, just, like, walking out your door... Things that you have to be preoccupied with. Like, I put my keys between my fingers. And I don't make eye contact with people. And I will try to cross the street. I don't take my trash out alone if I can help it. Like, there are just so many things.
Yeah. It's fucked up.
That's a thing.
The world is fucked up.
And then it's, like, exponential as you get into degrees of oppression. Like, I have to deal with all this, but... Like, then you add the layer of being, like, a black woman. And, like, it's just all these things that you have to be preoccupied with that, like, what else could I be doing with my time, like, if I wasn't preoccupied with having to do this?
Well, that's why women are paid less, because you're wasting so much time worrying about this.
Right. There's, right, of course.
There was another.
You nailed it.
There was another study that I saw recently that showed stress, like constant stress, whether it's from like poverty or fear or something like that, causes your brain to be so overwhelmed thinking about that you are literally not productive in anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So, like,
yeah, that's what I'm, yeah, that's, yeah, what I'm, yeah, talking about. Like
it's, you're basically held hostage by men and the threat that men, well, or not just men, those in power who pretty much don't have any consequences if they do something to you. Like, I'm actually right now, I'm also thinking about, like, all the protests where the police kettle the protesters, handcuff them, lay them on the ground, and then mace them. Like,
where'd that come from?
That was a couple weeks ago in St. Louis. But, like, the police are in a position of power. Nothing happened to them. Why, the mayor of St. Louis is like, I'm going to have somebody look at it. You're the fucking mayor. Look at it.
This seems a little...
Sorry.
Sidetracked.
Sorry.
No, but, I mean, there is a point there that... When
see another man
position,
thinks there's a point there.
No, when there's, well, a position,
suck my dick.
Well, grow, and then you wouldn't have these problems. So.
Can't you be ashamed of your gender for 5 minutes? Oh,
jeez, Sheila.
Oh my god.
Like, I was thinking about this the other day, in terms of specifically the protests that happened here in St. Louis, the reason for them was because of police brutality, because of the actions of police officers and the legal system letting them get away with this. The last people that should be policing the protesters are the police.
Right.
Like, this is the perfect example of when you should call in someone else to protest the police, to police the protesters. And I know people would look at this the wrong way, but I think something like the National Guard might actually do a better job.
Be better.
They activated the National Guard. They did not bring the National Guard to the protests.
No, they were
the National,
over off Grand,
yeah,
for some reason.
The National Guard was stationed outside of fire stations and emergency facilities, protecting,
yeah,
them.
Were, yeah, they were protecting them.
The fucking protesters weren't going there.
No.
No, the National Guard should have been there.
The National Guard should have been the ones protecting the protesters.
Yeah, they're actually trained.
You people, you protest. You make your points. We're just here to make sure you're safe from other people and to make sure that if there are people that are latching onto your protest, just causing mischief, that we shut those people down.
Yeah.
Because there are always people that just latch on and cause problems.
And the fucking way the police work is, one water bottle got thrown, time to pepper spray everybody, right, and launch tear gas. That is not a proportionate response, right, to a thrown water bottle.
Plus, the police specifically are who are being protested against.
Yeah.
You are literally protesting against the enemy that is standing right in front of you,
right,
who is there to stop you. It's a ridiculous system.
It is. It's absolutely ridiculous.
No, it's awful. Every protest I've been at, the police have been violent. It's been 3 or 4, I think, for this one. Sorry.
No, I opened up the can of worms in the first place.
I'm sad now.
I'm sad all the time. I'm a woman. Oh, what was that amazing quote from Big Mouth?
When there were so many of them.
During what's her face's bat mitzvah?
You're the man, Steve. Are you finished now?
Yes, Alex? Yeah, finally. Okay, good. During what's her name's bat mitzvah, where like she finds out that her mom, like who her mom is seeing.
Oh yeah.
And Connie's like, "This is just what women do. They take all the bullshit of the world." I wish I could remember exactly. It was so fucking good.
Yeah, that one. Big Mouth's gonna get a rewatch. I don't tend to rewatch series anymore.
It's short though, too.
It is. Yeah.
I've watched it twice.
Oh yeah.
That's holy shit. Easy.
Yeah.
We had to badger him to finish it, and now you've watched it twice since you finished it like 3 days ago.
So I finished it.
5 hour sitting.
Sunday? Saturday?
Something like that.
And then something happened where I wasn't really doing anything at the house, so it was just on the whole time.
It's easy. I mean, I can totally see doing that.
But it was like, it's so good. Like, I keep bringing it up in conversations at work, and I'm like, look, we can't talk about this here, but are you watching Big Mouth?
Yeah.
And they'll either be like, no or yes, and I'm like, oh, it's so good. If they say yeah, I'm like, yeah, it's so good, isn't it? Because, like, we can't say any specifics because nothing is safe to talk about.
No, not at work.
And then if they're not watching it, I'm like, listen, this is not safe for work, but it's really good. You should watch it. I was talking about it with people on the software promotion last night. So, like, half of the people in the chat were like, oh, it's so good. And the other people were like, what are you talking about? Like, we can't talk about it, but you should watch it. It's so good.
Yeah, I was talking about it this weekend with my nephew.
The fucking scene when Jesse, when Jesse gets her period, and she tells, oh shit, what's his name? Not Jay. The when Jesse gets her period, she talks to
the main dude.
Yeah, I can't remember his name, but he, like, as soon as she says that, he just vomits all over the bathroom. I'm sorry. Like,
yeah,
it was
just how ridiculous the reaction was.
You can tell he's just like scared and nervous, and then that happens, and that just like pushes him past the edge.
Yeah,
it's like bleh.
Nick and Andrew.
That's it. And then I love how anytime they do something that seems crazy, there's like this awesome explanation behind it. Like when Jay and Jesse are making out and Jay's like, listen, like I need more out of this relationship because like it's all physical with you, but like I don't really have a mom and like my family's kind of shitty, so I'm gonna need some more from this. Jay's like, oh, fine.
I did not realize that the ghost of Duke Ellington was Jordan Peele.
Yeah, I saw Jordan Peele had a credit.
I did too, but I never made the connection.
Well, he's one of the producers, great, isn't he?
He might be. He might be. I'm not sure.
I think it's him and Nick Kroll. Nick Kroll.
The series is produced by 18 people.
Okay, well, some of those people are probably executive producers who just put up some money.
Nick Kroll, John Mulaney.
Oh, I forgot about John Mulaney.
No, actually, Jordan Peele is not one of the names listed here.
Huh, okay.
As a producer. All right, now that we've been recording for almost an hour, shall we talk about the movie that we're here to talk about?
Yeah.
So, Alex, what did you think of Willow?
I like this movie a lot more than I have any fucking reason to. I don't know why. The only part that I disliked is the whole like 10-minute intro because I forgot how long title sequences used to be and how boring they were.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, I'm just watching a baby float down a river for 10 minutes. And that's also, like, I messaged Kayla and David, I'm like, this baby is better at canoeing than I am. Like, this baby didn't even come close to flipping over. Just fucking navigated on down, docked perfectly. I don't know how they got that baby to do that.
Kayla, what'd you think?
So I've seen this movie, it's been years since I've seen this movie, but I probably watched it a dozen times as a kid. Okay. Like,
you quote this movie.
I do. And do you recognize it now that, like, there is so much of this movie that is just ingrained in me that I didn't even remember.
Wow.
Like, and, like, this, I really like, I was really worried about rewatching it, but mm-hmm. I really feel like it stands up. Like, it stands the test of time.
This is,
yeah.
Even though Val Kilmer is weird.
Val Kilmer is weird. But
is that dude on acid the whole movie?
So I like the movie, but I feel like, I don't know, I feel like I've outgrown it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can appreciate it standing back and looking at it from a perspective of somebody who saw it when they were much younger.
Yeah.
Like, and I have an appreciation for it because it's very fun. It's very lighthearted. It doesn't take itself tremendously seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And the stakes seem high, but then they don't seem very high because just the level of ridiculousness of some of it.
Yeah.
It's just fun. Like, I don't know. I don't know how else to describe it. It's just a fun movie.
Especially I was watching it and I was trying to be ultra critical of it. And maybe it's just because we watched all those really bad late 80s fantasy movies in Mystery Science Theater.
I was so scared this was going to be a fucking Wizards of the Lost Kingdom. Scared.
So like, this movie came out in 88, mm-hmm. just for some context there.
It's shitty year.
I was 17.
I was not born.
You're right.
I had just been born.
Yep. You babies.
I was a fresh age of zero, not
negative 9 months.
So I was really surprised that Kevin Pollak was in this movie.
I have to look that up.
Do you see A Few Good Men?
No.
I'm trying to think what else you might know him from. He's this guy.
Yeah, I got him pulled up.
Okay. So he was one of the two brownies.
Oh, yeah. I can see that.
He was the shorter one.
The bald one. The one with the mouse cap.
Rule.
I like the wizard. Just gonna throw that out there.
Which one? Wizard?
The first one that you meet.
Oh, Billy Barty?
Yeah.
Yeah,
the bones have spoken. They don't tell me anything.
Yeah. No, I like awesome. That dude too. Yeah.
Yeah, so good.
Like the thing about watching this movie, it was like this felt like a D&D adventure.
Yeah.
Like just some of the ridiculous resolutions to things.
Oh my God, I didn't even think about it. It seems like it was rolled out. Follow the bird. It went towards the village. Fuck the bird. Follow the river.
Okay. You really need to take that fighter with you. Yeah. The mayor's like, no, he needs to stay back in town. The mayor is now going also along with the fighter because you really need to take that guy along with you. Yeah, it's just like some of the ridiculous things like that just worked. But I think that's why it worked for me is because it felt like that ad hoc role playing, you know, shit's not going right. Well, let's just make it up.
Yeah.
You know, let's just yes and through this.
There are definitely things about the movie that I don't care for. I hate the forced romance.
That romance is weird.
Oh, God, it's so weird and gross. And like, but I really enjoyed the character of the, I don't know what you would call her. She's like the commander of the army or something like that.
Sorsha,
yeah.
The daughter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
As being like this strong female character. But then that is kind of underwritten by she falls in love with the puckish, rogue, Mad Mardigan.
Just asshole.
He's an asshole.
He is kind of an asshole, yeah. So, I actually own the 3-book trilogy that was written.
Somebody on my Snapchat just mentioned that. I didn't even know it was a book series.
So, there's a there was a three-book trilogy that was written after the fact by Chris Claremont, mm-hmm. who was best known for being the writer on the X-Men comic book for like 20 years, like during their heyday.
Yeah.
And he was contracted by Lucas, whatever division of Lucas owned the book rights, to write the books. Actually, I met him and talked to him about this. I got at least one, maybe two of the books signed by the author. And like the books are interesting because they follow Laura Dannon. Like in the first book, she's like 12. And then the later book, she progressively gets older. I don't think I ever actually finished reading the third one. But basically the premise of the story is, imagine that from birth, you were told that you were going to be the savior and you were going to be the greatest queen that ever lived. Now imagine growing up and being a 12-year-old who has been done nothing but fed that.
Yeah.
And she is just an obnoxious
insufferable.
Little... Oh my gosh, she's just completely insufferable. Which is just a great twist on a lot of the fantasy tropes that are out there. The first one was a lot of fun, but it's been probably 20 years since I read it. So I couldn't tell you a lot of the details of it. It's been a long time.
Say that line that you always say.
I stole the baby from the stupid Daikini.
Yeah. She used to say that all the time, and I would just be like, all right. I don't know what we're talking about.
The other one is pigs. You're all pigs.
Yeah.
It's just like there's so much of it that's like, I used to, like those dog things.
Those things are fucking creepy.
Weird and freaked out. Like yeah.
They're like,
I would
dog
like,
rats.
Yeah. But they're just, I remember them so vividly from being a child. That like weird table thing that comes to life in the end sequence.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Now, that was like the only CGI in the whole movie.
No.
No? All right. It looked like the most obnoxious to me. There's a ton of
CGI, but they do the CGI really well, considering that it's a fantasy movie made in the late 80s. Yeah. Like,
that,
they do the CGI pretty well. There's a bunch of CGI.
There was a lot of not CGI, though, too. There was a lot of green screen effect.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's
true. The green screen, the practical effects, like, that was less distressing to me than seeing that table moving around. I was like, this is super uncanny valley.
That
two-headed dragon thing.
That was actually really good.
It's really good.
Like, that was better than some of the stuff they were doing in front of green screens.
Yeah.
Like, the effect of that was a whole lot better. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But it just really was. Like, you could tell, like, that's where they put their effort into that sequence.
Into that dragon.
And there was a lot of action in the movie. Like, a lot. And a lot of pretty decent action.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could pretty much always tell what was going on. The fights were staged pretty well. They were staged for what amounts to a kid's movie. I mean,
right.
This wasn't this, you know, we weren't going to be seeing people's heads flying off or anything like
right.
that. The amount of blood was enough. I mean, to
it's
know,
what, like
every
PG
once in a while,
movie, PG-13, maybe. Yeah.
Every once in a while you'd see blood on a sword.
Yeah.
But you didn't really see a lot of blood and guts or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Probably PG-13 back then. Probably like G now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't even know what it was rated. No, it was straight up PG.
Yeah. Yeah.
So here's a couple of fun things that I realized as I was watching this. Ron Howard directed this. Ron Howard directed this as a Lucasfilm. He is directing and has just wrapped production on Solo, a Star Wars story,
mm-hmm.
which is another Lucasfilm production, which is the Han Solo Solo movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I was looking at some of the people who are involved in the movie, some of the actors. Warwick Davis, Willow.
Yep.
He played, I want to say he was in some of the Ewok costumes during Empire. Kenny Baker was in one scene. He was in R2-D2. The guy that plays Mad Mardigan's buddy, Eric, the actor that plays that guy, I'm trying to find his name.
Oh,
Gavin
Warwick
O'Hurley.
Is in one of the Harry Potter movies.
Oh yeah, he's shit. What's
I
want to
say
name?
He's the Goblin.
Yeah,
I have to pull it up.
And he's like one of the named ones too.
Yeah,
I just can't remember his name off the top of my head. Anyway, Eric, the blonde knight guy,
Eric the
redhead.
Holy.
Yeah, he
the his one who shouldn't have died, and Val Kilmer should have died.
Yeah. The actor's name is Gavin O'Hurley.
Mm-hmm.
So Ron Howard played Richie Cunningham in Happy Days.
Grip Hook. He plays Grip Hook. That's right. Who's like the main goblin character.
Yep. Gavin O'Herlihy played Chuck Kent Cunningham, Richie's older brother that was almost never seen in the series. Which I just thought it was funny that guy was brought back. That's probably why he was cast in that role. Because he knew the director. And Billy Barty, the guy who played High Alwyn, he's been in a billion things. He was in, the movie Legend. He's got 197 acting credits. He died in 2000. But yeah, he was in Legend. He was in...
This is George Lucas specifically wrote this film for Warwick Davis after meeting him on the set of Star Wars.
That's not a surprise.
That's really interesting.
But yeah, I talked to Chris Claremont after at least one of the books came out, maybe it was the second one, and asked him about the process of how it happened. He's like, oh yeah, we were, this was a contracted thing. And, you know, and it was like, so like, what information did you have? He goes, oh, I have to look at George Lucas's notebooks about it. Like apparently George Lucas had written copious notes about the characters and everything. And he got to have access to some of the notebooks to get a feel for the ideas that were behind some of the characters.
All right. I didn't know who Warwick Davis was, but I went on IMDb and I see a more recent photo of him and I'm like, holy shit, I've seen this guy in a lot more movies.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out what those are now. Was he in Bad Santa?
No, but...
He was in Harry Potter.
Yeah.
You guys said that.
The African-American guy, I've seen him in a bunch of stuff recently. Maybe not a bunch of stuff, maybe a few things recently.
This is funny because it's something that I caught, but it was so little that I wouldn't have even thought to bring it up now. In one of the scenes, Willow says he's handing the baby over to Mad Mardigan,
mm-hmm.
and he says... goodbye, little one. And I, for some reason, I was watching his mouth, and I realized that it was dubbed over. And I was like, that's kind of weird. Like, I wonder what he could have possibly said. And I guess this says, Willow originally said goodbye, Allura Dannon, when handing her over to Mad Mardigan, but it was realized later during editing that he wouldn't have known her name.
He wouldn't have had her name yet.
Yeah.
That's funny.
But also that said that most of Val Kilmer's lines were ad-libbed.
Really?
He doesn't talk a lot, and like... The dialogue he does have seems off the, you know, just off the kind cuff anyway.
Off the
so.
Cuff, yeah.
Inconsequential and spazzy. He wasn't in Bad Santa. I'm confusing that for something else.
Tony Cox is the guy I'm thinking of. He was in Bad Santa.
What?
And in Bad Santa 2.
At the beginning, when this movie started, I was afraid that we were also going to get progressively smaller and smaller people. Because... That's what was happening for them.
What were you afraid of, Alex?
I thought we were going to get subatomic people at a certain point.
All of the people you see in the movie are their basic fantasy roles. I mean,
yeah,
Warwick, that's like a halfling or gnome, or then there's the humans, the heenies.
The brownies.
But the brownies are pixies.
No,
they're pixies, but they don't, can't fly.
Yeah, but it's still kind of like a common
fantasy.
There are also are pixies, so, and they were smaller than the brownies.
Right. Yeah, there was one floating around when the...
There was a couple floating around when he talks to...
Whoever that was.
Yeah, whatever.
Does she even have a name?
I don't know. She never shows up again. Nobody cares about her. She just like shows up. She's like, ah, here, take this wand.
Listen to what I have to say.
Doesn't even give him good information. Doesn't even give him good guides.
Just to get it somewhere else.
Yeah.
So one thing that I loved about this plot was how it was the whole thing was a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
Yes.
If this baby had been left alone.
That's how. So this is a common fantasy device. Mm-hmm. It's the entire device of Harry Potter.
Yep.
A prophecy foretold that a child born is going to bring the ruin of the rule of, you know, whoever. So then that person searches them out.
To be fair, that's also a prophecy that came out when Jesus was born.
Yeah,
this has been a trope for a while.
Like, so then all this shit happens, and because the shit happens, well, I don't know that this one specifically is a self-fulfilling prophecy. Because she, you'd have to see what happens later,
right?
Assumedly by reading the books, like
Well, but
they say she's a special child.
Yeah, they just say she's a special, child. But the one seer or whatever says, "Oh yeah, by the way, your daughter's gonna betray you."
Yeah.
Like, and it's just such an off the cuff thing. It's like, by the way.
Oh, hey, also your.
Hey, also found this little bit of info here.
She's like, yeah, I believe you about this baby shit, but about my daughter, fuck you.
Right.
Ah, fuck.
Let's take care of this baby situation first.
Yeah, that seems more important than my daughter, who's a full grown human.
Who's already a full grown human and a warrior.
Yeah, in charge of my army.
And yeah, and is in control of the army.
Yeah, fuck it.
Wait, maybe we should rethink things.
No, it's fine.
Look.
What, the end fighting sequence? Okay, so is it just me, or did the thing on YouTube cut off way before the end?
It did.
So you didn't actually get to see the ending. You didn't notice. Okay.
The very end of the YouTube thing was him getting sent off on the horse.
Yeah.
Then there's another like 2-minute sequence of him coming back into Hobbiton.
Yeah. Essentially the Hobbiton. Horse.
God damn it. I was waiting to see this.
Right. And I found another video, and I screwed up. I should have posted it because I found it after the fact. And it was, there's like 2 or 3 minutes of him coming back to town and him seeing the wizard again. And then like everybody in town's like, yay, Willow's back. And then like the crowd parts and his wife and kids are there and they run and embrace and have this moment. And like, it's so saccharine sweet,
yeah,
but like appropriate, like they earned it.
Yeah.
Like they really did earn it by that point. Like they even show other like dwarf women who are like dabbing their eyes. Like, this is such a sweet moment.
Oh.
Yeah, the character earns it. Because the character of Willow is, like, just so steadfast and, like, good the whole time.
Yeah.
Like, for no reason.
He's Bilbo. Except Bilbo had a family.
The best...
He's Bilbo, except he's less nice reluctant guy than Bilbo. Yeah, Bilbo's nice guy. Can be a douchebag sometimes.
Hold on.
Bilbo... Actually... No, he's Samwise.
He is.
But he's Samwise after he's hooked up with the barmaid and had a couple of kids.
Exactly.
This is like Samwise's adventures after Bilbo pieces out.
My favorite part was like pretty early on when he first finds the baby and he's like, okay, look, this is what we're going to do. We're going to push it back out and we're never going to talk about it. I was like, oh, yeah.
Like, I will not be ignored. And then his family just like promptly ignores his ass, like takes the baby inside. And I don't want to hold the baby. Here, hold the baby.
Yeah. None of you fall in love with this.
And then the wizard's like, do you have any love for this child?
Yes.
I forbid anybody from falling in love with this baby.
He kind of David his way through that sequence.
He did.
I loved how after he leaves the kids with the baby by the water, he goes back up and pretends to be plowing the field. His wife's like, the kids are calling. She's like, you left them by the water? What are you thinking? Like, there was a lot of good stuff like that in there. Yeah. Like
you can't legitimately give a kid black root.
Right. Legitimately taking care of a child in this situation is not ideal. And they addressed a lot of it.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't address poopy diapers, which is fine, because we don't need that. But
they don't talk about it. They do mention that he's like, these are her changing rags. And I think in one very, like, one scene, it's really short, but he's like finishing changing
her. Right. But it's not it's not like this plot device of them needing to change a poopy diaper in the middle of combat or something silly like that.
Right.
And I liked how, like, even there was that one sequence where Mad Margaretigan's holding the baby and he's like cooing at her and, you know, and like,
yeah,
like this big tough warrior guy. And he's like, oh, it's a baby, which is
he stole her black root.
I liked that. I mean, it's just they felt like real people in those situations instead of ridiculous archetypes who would have, I'm not gonna mess with that child, you know? And that baby was adorable.
She's really cute.
I loved the cut shots of somebody saying something and the baby reacting to it. every one of those was great. Like, the baby's like, suspicion.
Yeah, I wonder how long like, they would have to sit there, like, getting different reactions, just, like, different things that they're trying.
It was, there was two babies, so they might have, they might have just filmed the...
I think that was the law or something. Like, that was a way they got around the law. I don't know if they still have to.
They did it on Full House.
Yeah. Yeah, because you could only have an infant on set for like so many hours or something like
under
that.
A certain age.
Yeah.
And it's really low. It's like 3 or 4 hours a day or something like that.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And considering that infant is like in a lot of the scenes. And like a lot of the times when they show her, like it's obvious there's really a child.
Yeah.
Like there are times when you can tell in movies and stuff, it's like, I've got a baby.
Yes, this is a real human baby.
I mean, that sledding scene was probably with a doll.
That was, yeah, that probably was with a
doll. You can't even see the baby in that. He's got it in his...
In his little papoose thing.
Yeah, that's true.
That sledding scene was too long. I'm going to put that out there.
Yeah.
It was too long. You didn't need to slide through a glacier.
I didn't watch most of the sledding scene because I was working.
It was also too long.
I liked how they did the trolls. I liked how they did the people encased in rock. Because of trolls. Like, they weren't just statues.
Yeah.
Like, they were people inside of rock. I thought that was interesting. But the rocks, you could see through.
I mean, yeah. You can see through some rocks.
Sure. I just thought that was kind of cool. It was kind of a different take on it. Because normally when you see that... I mean, hell, even in Lord of the Rings, you see stone. The trolls that...
Well, the trolls turn into stone.
They turn into stone.
I was trying to remember what happened there. Oh, a Bilbo tricked them into talking.
Yeah. They tricked him into fighting with each other and talking over which one was going to get to eat him.
Yeah, he got them to waste time.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, this was... Yeah.
This is a fun... Just a fun adventure movie. Like, I would happily show this to my kids without even... blinking at it, you know, just turn it on and walk away, just not even worry about it.
Yeah,
and would have like I kind of wish I would have thought of this when they were younger.
Yeah,
because like I get it, just totally turned Holden loose with this.
Oh,
you know,
yeah,
Saturday afternoon, just turned it on and walked away. Like, because there are some that you just don't want to do that with.
Yeah,
you Holden or Aaron like D&D fantasy or anything like that?
Holden got into Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit pretty heavily for a while, especially because of Gollum. Like, he was kind of, yeah, like he kind of focused in on Gollum more than anything.
All right.
Which is, yeah.
All right.
But we watched the Hobbit movies, and I don't know if he ever watched the Lord. He was going to watch Lord of the Rings movies. I don't know if he ever got through all of them.
What's weird for me is I put this movie like at the same level of enjoyment for me as like the Lord of the Rings movies.
Really?
Yeah. Like this isn't like this is one of those movies where I just enjoy the story more than anything else. It's still, none of them are still as good as Fury Road.
Do you have words, Kayla?
I just don't think you can compare it. I don't think you can compare it to like a fucking a literal epic like Lord of the Rings. And I'm not saying like it's epic like the kids say it's epic. Lord of the Rings is like a literal epic. Like, it's
12 hours of film.
It's a glorious masterpiece that makes you feel all emotions like throughout the journey.
All
like,
7 endings.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say all 7 emotions.
There are only 3.
That's fair. Hungry, I thought that felt high.
Hungry, angry, and hangry. That's it, right?
Seems reasonable.
Like, yeah, I really like this movie. And I mean, I probably like it. I'll probably never watch it again. Like, it's probably run its course for me in my life. But
unless I watch it with the kids, I don't see you watching it again. I mean,
yeah.
I might go back and revisit the books.
There just isn't enough meat on the movie. It was just something, like I said, I watched like half.
What's going on your phone?
What?
There's words I'm telling you.
All right,
never
mind.
I'm confused. No, I get what you're saying.
There's I don't remember what I was saying.
There's not enough meat on the bone.
The world of Willow might be fun to play D&D adventure in. That kind of thing.
Maybe.
A role-playing adventure in. Just because the world does feel fairly fleshed out.
Oh, That fucking...
I mean, they go as far as to renaming humans.
Yeah.
Daikini.
So much. Like, I almost remembered this movie verbatim. Like, I was shocked by how much of this movie I remembered.
I also can appreciate a good fantasy story that deals with racism.
Yeah.
Like, because, I mean, it's very small and subtle. But, like, they have a derogatory term for Willow and his people.
Yeah.
The Pecks.
Peck.
Yeah. It's like, don't call me that. Why, Peck?
Peck. Yeah. Peck. God, he was so fucking obnoxious.
I mean, to be fair, he was still in captivity.
Yeah, but if I was in captivity, I know, I'd be like sugar sweet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no kidding.
I'm be peck. Really? That's the only people, that's the only living thing you've seen? Oh, can I have some water? He has... knocks it off of his hands.
He's like licking his fingers.
Like, even down to that scene where Val Kilmer starts fake crying in the...
Yeah.
The crow cage. Like, somehow I just remember all of it.
That was uncomfortable. The fake crying.
Oh, yeah.
At that point, I just wanted them to walk away from this person.
Yeah, it's like, why are you still standing there? Why are we having conversations here?
Why did we camp here?
Yeah.
It's because they were told to go to the crossroads and give the baby That's to true. The first human that they saw. That was the crossroads.
And he was the first human that they saw.
And they were reluctant. For oh, that, good reason.
Fucking Eric looked so much like Brandon. Did you notice that?
The redhead?
Yeah.
With the beard?
Why are we talking like this now? Did something happen?
Yeah, I guess he kind of looked like Brandon.
When he was laying on the ground dying.
Oh, really? Because I have that very clip in my Snapchat.
Yeah, that looks like Brandon. Also, the big cheesy smile. I think that was a big part of it for me. I'm dying, but I'm smiling. I'm your DM.
He's kind of got the same nose as Brandon.
I kind of wish that guy would have been Mad Mardigan.
Yeah, that's why I said, like, why did the dashing redhead with the beard who only said one misogynistic thing die before Val Kilmer?
Like, I would have believed that guy being the character of Mad Mardigan more. Yeah. I don't know why. Like, and I could believe Sorsha, like, falling in love with that guy more.
Just because they're both redheads?
Yeah. Because he's just cuter than Val Kilmer is. I mean, if I'm going to have a type.
Yeah, that's... No, I agree.
It's redheads, by the way.
It's
I also appreciated that the wizard, the strong wizard, I guess, whatever we call it, the witch, maybe. I don't know what her title is. Got turned into like five different animals over the course of the movie.
Because Willow had to level up.
Yeah.
He was getting there.
Just grinding that out.
I did like the thing where it's like, oh, she's a beautiful young woman. And then she's like, oh, has it really been so long?
Oh, yeah. I didn't even catch that.
Yeah. Like when she finally is human again, she looks at her hand. She's like, has it really been so long? Like, and there was like this, there was a moment of like real pain there. It was like, wow, this is letting somebody who can really act for a minute. Mm-hmm. That was good. And then like the next time you see her hair is beautiful and like she magicked up some stuff.
Yeah.
I'm gonna tighten this up, straighten
that. Oh,
that's
what I was gonna say. That end fighting sequence between I don't remember their names. Bavmarda's
one.
And what's her face? The White Witch.
Ren? I don't remember. Give me a minute.
That's why I said that one, the real witch.
So we're always talking about... Yeah.
Finn Rizzell.
Let's call her Finn. We're always talking about, like, the way movies handle, like, women and battle and violence. And this is a movie that came out in the late 80s that had... The end battle sequence is between two elderly women. And it doesn't
The battle
really...
sequence that matters the most. Because there's fighting going on outside.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And they do not throw punches in this, like...
Wait a minute.
They do not pull punches.
They pull punches.
I was
going to
say, she literally threw a punch.
They don't pull punches. Like, they're literally, like... And she's sitting there choking this woman out. Like,
yeah.
So it's, like...
But I love the part where Finn just flat... They're, like, face just cold cocks.
Yeah.
That was great.
Like, this... That was kind of before its time.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that was good. Like, they... And, like, they... they were of a power set where it was a fun battle to watch also. Like, it was like the magic seemed appropriate for what they had shown throughout the course of the movie. And when she's flipping her around in that with that wand and just whacking her off of walls, and that was great. That was really good.
And these are two characters who could have easily been made into men.
Oh yeah. Yep.
Easily. And probably in most movies they would have been. Like, they're...
Yeah.
It's just funny because I was talking to David, and he's like, you guys gotta do Willow, because I don't want to do Willow. I was like, okay. And I was like, I actually like this movie. And he's like, yeah, wait until... But I mentioned, like, it might have been the nostalgia filter. And he's like, yeah, wait until you watch it again. And we were talking about how, like, movies don't age well. But I felt like there were a lot of things about this movie, like, when I rewatched. That's why I was so critical watching it, because I had that conversation with David.
Sure.
But I felt like a lot of things about this movie aged well for that reason. Yeah. Like,
this movie isn't Revenge of the Nerds. It's not full of sexual assault and rape.
Yeah. I mean, there are some things about it that aren't completely great. Like that one scene with the jealous husband.
Where he tries to rape.
Where Val Kilmer's dressed like a woman.
Oh, yeah.
And that wasn't awful. Like, it was an obvious plot device to get them to the next scene, which is they need Val Kilmer dressed as a woman, pretending he's this baby's mother.
Yeah.
Which got them through the next scene.
Right.
That was kind of, like, cringy.
That next scene made me a little uncomfortable when, what was her name?
Because of how hot Val Kilmer was. Uncomfortable in my pants.
Sorsha.
Where she goes, you're strong, you're a man. And I was like, ugh. you're the fucking general of this army. Why are you saying that?
Well, statistically speaking.
Oh, no, don't. Yeah, statistically speaking, 100% of the women in the MMA could kill me.
The average man is stronger than the average woman, but that isn't...
What's average?
Indicative of anything other than societal conditioning.
Are you okay?
She's fighting with herself over the words coming out of her mouth.
No, I know exactly, like, how I feel about this specific thing. It's just it's difficult to portray. Like, physically, most men could beat me up, even though it's hard to admit. And I will fight them all.
Yeah, we know that.
What are you looking at? Your legs. I want to break them.
What? Is that a quote?
Yeah. From this movie.
That's for Val Kilmer.
Val Kilmer said it to Sorsha. She's riding by on her horse.
I missed that part.
Oh, God.
Yeah, there's a lot of animosity between those two. Until he takes that potion.
Your legs. Oh, he's being a horn dog. I want to break them. Oh, shit.
Yeah. Oh, that took a turn.
I
just thought he had a foot fetish there for a second.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, he's one of those fucking guys that asked Kayla for foot pictures on Snapchat.
That hasn't happened in a long time. I'm losing my charm.
Did you show your feet? I feel like if you did, that kind of you...
Oh, have I kind of, like...
You gave it away. You
gave up the milk. They didn't have to... You know what? I hate this. I hate where this is going.
My foot milk?
Yeah.
Okay, abort.
Abort. Yeah, just cancel.
Backpedal.
Now we got to talk for another 20 minutes, so there's at least 20 minutes after that comment. Yeah. I don't have anything else to say, though.
Foot milk. That's a good movie. I would show it to my kids if I wanted to get them into fantasy type movies or thing. I probably wouldn't watch it as an adult and be totally thrilled with it.
Yeah, I mean, I liked revisiting the movie.
But, yeah.
But if I was going to this cold, like, I don't think I would have appreciated seeing this movie in a theater.
Oh yeah.
This week, you know, I recognize this movie is not made for a 46-year-old fan of fantasy. Yeah, in 2017. It's just not, I'm not there. Which is, and that's fine. Not every movie should be made for me. But at 17, this is a fine, fun movie.
My mom quotes this movie all the time. We all did. Just constantly. Our whole lives.
Was it like the only video you owned? Like,
I don't know.
Smokey and the Bandit?
Yeah, Smokey and the Bandit. It's like my family's like localized meme.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like sure. this entire movie and like sections of it.
That's like there's certain movies that I watch and I'll quote certain lines from that when I was growing up, my friends and I would just cackle madly at this one line. Mm-hmm. And like if I mention it, I'll be like, what? It's like, oh, it's from such and such. You're like, I don't remember that line for that movie. I know that movie very well, and I don't remember that line. It's like, I know it's there. I watched that movie like every other day all summer long in 1985 because that's, you know, that's how HBO played movies. They wouldn't show the same movie on consecutive days. I believe they still don't. So when they got the contract to show Star Wars, it was on the first, the third, the fifth, the seventh, like straight through the entire month. And it ran like three times a day because they also couldn't play them back to back. Also, like there were certain times when you would see To Be Determined show up in the programming guide. Like at like 3 a.m. So we always recorded those because sometimes they would play movies that were like for whatever reason, like they contractually were allowed to show a movie that was only like a month out of theaters or something crazy like that. So we would always record that stuff at 3 a.m. Sometimes it was just shit. But every once in a while, there'd be something that was just like, oh my God, I can't believe they got that movie. Back in the days when you actually do put things on tape. Our VHS, our VCR had a remote, which a lot of them didn't. Ooh. It was corded. You had to plug it in.
That's the good stuff.
Yeah. Sit there and watch movies on broadcast TV and pause it during the commercial breaks. Pause the recording during the commercial breaks to cut out the commercials. Yeah.
It's a very, very active way to record something.
Well, you know, we that's how we had to watch them. There were those commercial breaks. There were rumors that they used the commercial breaks in large metropolitan cities to determine what TV shows people were watching because they would be contracted with the city sewer systems to find out during which period people were flushing the most. And they knew that that's the commercial breaks people were on. And they'd skew the commercial breaks for TV shows across the different networks. So they weren't all breaking at the same time. Until they found out on certain shows that people would switch over to see what was on the other channels when commercial breaks were on. And then sometimes wouldn't come back. So then they started syncing up all their commercial breaks. So if you change channels, all you were getting was more commercials.
They do that on the radio. I remember the very last time I tried to listen to the radio, I would switch radio stations and they were all playing commercials. Like, what the fuck?
20 and 40. I think that's still true at the 20 and 40 is at least that's the way it used to be. I had a buddy who worked in the radio.
I haven't listened to the radio in a while now.
Yeah, he worked in the radio. He worked in radio in the 90s, and like hearing his experiences of working in radio kind of got me out of listening to the radio. Like it was like, man, this is weird and shifty. I called him one day, and it was, I can't remember what day of the week it was. It was like Tuesday or Thursday, and we were supposed to have lunch. And I was like, hey, man, are we going to go to lunch today? And he said, no. And by the way, don't call me on Tuesdays anymore while I'm at work. I was like, okay. He said, I'll explain it later. So I saw him later that night. He's like, yeah, at the radio station, Tuesdays are the days that studios contact us to, and I'm like, well, what do you mean? It was like, that's how we know which songs to play. Like we get pimped to by the labels.
Yeah.
And they call in because they're offering, they call in and offer the DJs. They offer, that's how we get our ticket giveaways. That's how we get all the stuff we give away, is because they're calling to offer us things that we can give away or that we can use, bribes, you know, that kind of stuff. It's like, oh man, that just weird, shady business.
That's how all that shit used to be, because they had so much control over the distribution of media. It was, they got to pick who was going to be popular.
I remember in, it had to have been like 93-ish, whenever the Counting Crows, their first album came out, I was working in at a music store at the time, and we get the industry magazines that also, like, they would be how you could order newer albums, because we had like these huge binders of, if you wanted an album that we didn't have in stock, you'd look for it and you could order it. Well, the newer stuff, we got these smaller books. Well, in them, they had like full page advertisements for all the new stuff coming out. And I'll never forget, it was like there were two albums that came out at almost the exact same time. And it was like, man, this other one is so much better than Counting Crows. Like, Counting Crows is good, but this other one's better. Yeah, like, in my opinion, for the style of music it was. And they were very similar styles of music. The thing is the advertisement was a 9-panel showing album covers. The one right in the middle was the Counting Crows. Like, smack dab in the middle. It was like, oh, that's how that works. And sure enough, that's the one that just rocketed up the charts, because that's the one that everybody ordered. It's the one everybody fronted in the stores and everything else. It's like, that's how that works. That's the one they put all their effort behind in marketing it.
I wonder if that's what happened to Back in Black. So we found out yesterday that AC/DC's Back in Black is the second best-selling album of all time.
Interesting.
AC/DC sucks.
I don't remember them being a crazy popular band.
What?
Right?
Oh, were they? Oh yeah.
I mean, I was
you
also...
You don't remember, first of all.
I was
it
also...
It was 1980 when the album came out.
Yeah, I was also -8 when the album dropped, but...
What was that? It was right after their lead singer had died. Right after Bon Scott died. And they were coming out after that. So it was like, yeah, it was like this whole, are they going to be anything good after that? And it turned out they were.
I mean, a shitload of people bought it, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things that it's like, you know, that like AC/DC had some talent. Like, I think Angus Young was back then was rated like one of the best guitar players.
I think so.
But there were probably better rock bands.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah. What's funny is there's a in the later 80s. That AC/DC had just put out a new album, and
the later 80s would have been Thunderstruck.
Was that 80s or was that 90s? I don't remember.
So 1980 was Back in Black, or before that was Livewire.
Yeah, I don't remember. I'm not a huge AC/DC fan.
I actually liked AC/DC. they were one of the few 8-tracks I actually had.
So somebody was interviewing Angus, and I can't remember which album it was for, but whatever album it was, let's just say it was their, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. It was probably the Razor's Edge, because I want to say it was probably around 1990, which was that was when that was released. And they, in the interview, they're like, so what would you say to people who would say that you've made the same album 12 times in a row? And he's like, he's kind of looking off in the distance. He looked straight at the camera. He said, I would call them liars. We've made the same album 13 times in a row. just like absolutely like no illusions about exactly who he was and what he was doing. And it was
fucking beautiful.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. Angus was always one of the people that interested me, because he would come out on stage in like a full suit, and then by the end of the set, he was in his boxers.
Yeah,
because he's like coming out like I'm gonna be fancy. I'm on stage, and then he's like, oh, this is hot.
Then he wears that schoolboy outfit after that.
Yeah.
Well, that reminds me, there was an interview with the lead singer of Queensryche on Headbangers Ball. Ricky Rackman was the host of Headbangers Ball at the time. And he's interviewing the lead singer of Queensryche. And I was a huge Queensryche fan at the time. And he's interviewing, he's like, oh, man, you guys are coming off. And, like, Ricky Rackman's thing was, he was the biggest fan of whoever he was interviewing. Oh, man, I'm your biggest fan. Oh, I'm such your biggest fan. And he's like, man, you guys are coming off, like an 18-month tour. He's like, man, that's like a year and a half, man. And Jeff Tate, the lead singer, looks at me and goes, yes, Ricky, that's exactly like a year and a half. Like, you can tell he was just so done with all this bullshit. It's like, I've literally been on the road for 18 months. I just don't have time for your shit right now, Ricky.
That's good shit.
Yeah.
What do I call it?
Yeah. All right. So, almost 2 hours in. Good talk about Willow. We'll be right back.